Hey everyone, Tawny here. I am so excited to share that my husband and I launched a non-alcoholic beverage called Parentheses. It's technically two drinks, a before and an after. The before uses herbs that stimulate the senses, and the after uses herbs that calm the senses. Head to drinkparentheses.com and follow us at drinkparentheses.
Hey everybody, welcome. Welcome. It's Lisa and I am here as always with my BFF goddess Potus.
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks today. Okay. All right.
Stevie Nicks is here. Surprise.
Stevie Nicks is actually Tawny's dog.
Yeah, I really did. I have a dog named Stevie Nicks and a cat named Meg White.
So perfect. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I just got a cup of tea with some oat milk in it, and I am just ready to interview our fabulous friend.
Yes, we are very excited today. We have a wonderful guest. We have with us Stephanie Wilder Taylor. Stephanie is an author, TV personality, and co-host of the popular podcast For Crying Out Loud. And she is here today to talk about her new book, Drunk-ish, Loving and Leaving Alcohol. You guys, it's amazing. I read it. I ripped right through it. Stephanie is also the co-host of the popular podcast For Crying Out Loud, Rose Pricks, and Bored AF. She co-created and hosted the late night comedy parenting show, Parental Discretion, with Stephanie Wilder Taylor for Nick Mom on Nickelodeon. And you may know her also as the author of Sippy Cups Are Not for Chardonnay, Nap Time is the New Happy Hour, and other books as well. Welcome, Stephanie, to Recovery Rocks.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to this. I'm really excited to be doing this show with both of you guys. Now, you guys are big drinkers, right?
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Rage. Raging.
Nonstop.
No, it's so nice to be among like sober women and talk about this stuff and just be speaking the same language. And it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. It's great to have you. And our audience, I know, you know, is loves reading all kinds of Quitlet and all kinds of recovery stuff. And it's a real treat also for us to have somebody who has experience sort of on both sides of the mommy wine culture picture. And, you know, I think maybe just starting out, you could sort of track your story a little bit, tell everybody, you know, what about the book they should know and what your journey's been like.
Well, I think that speaking of that mommy wine culture, I'm pretty sure that that's a big reason why people were interested in the book, in the story in general. Basically, what happened that made me become like public about being sober, because that was not actually my choice, but I was originally a blogger and I had written these books about, you know, making fun of drinking. It wasn't, you know, they didn't have recipes in them, but they, you know, the thing about talking about drinking and being a new mom is it's sort of a way to, in my mind, feel a little edgy, capture a little of my previous before kids personality. Do you know what I mean? I'm not being very articulate about
that. Yes. No, I totally get that. Yeah. I identified with it right away in the book. You know, you talk about your drinking from when you were 14 years old. And I was like, I would have hung with her. I would have loved to have hung with her.
Yeah. And in my mind, which I think this book is really about, and the way I pitched it even to my publishing company was that the fact is, I never thought of myself as an alcoholic. And I know a lot of alcoholics who felt like, oh yeah, I know I'm an alcoholic. It's just, I don't want to quit. I didn't feel like that. I was like, I don't want to quit. And I don't really think that I have a problem. What I have a problem doing is just managing and controlling my drinking, which I didn't realize was kind of the definition of having an alcohol problem. I just thought, why is it that every time I set out to have a couple of glasses of wine, I drink too much. I was one of those people that I never set out to get drunk. I wasn't a person who was like, yeah, I want to get raging drunk. I want to get my party on. I was somebody who wanted to like take the edge off, you know, relax, have a couple of glasses of wine. It just once I had a couple glasses of wine, I was like, well, this feels good. So I want to keep this feeling going. So let me have one more. And then, I think I'm starting to feel sober. Let me have one more. And then before you know it, I'm drunk and I don't know I'm drunk. That was my story. So when I had my first baby and I was in my late 30s, part of my personality was like, yeah, like I'm fun. I was a stand-up comedian. I was worked in a male-dominated, like I wrote on shows with a lot of men, and it was like that kind of atmosphere. I had my edge. So when I had a kid and I was just home all the time, I was like, well, how do I reconnect with that edge? And it was like, oh, having a glass of wine reminds me that I'm still me and I'm still kind of fun. And then I leaned hard into that, you know, and then I wrote about it that way. And I started a blog and I was, you know, I was baby on board. I was bored. You guys, this is all kind of boring. We're all above this. Like we don't need to be boring people. Like let's get our, anyway, yeah. I realized that there were a ton of women on the internet that felt the same way. So that was my first like, oh, me too. Oh my gosh, I found my people. So it wasn't even that I was drinking so much. It was that I really tapped into that as a sense of humor and as a sensibility. And we're all cooler than the rest. Like all of us drinking moms, we're cool.
Yeah.
And I kind of believe that. And then when I got a book deal to write Sippy Cups Are Not for Chardonnay. My baby was only a few months old. So I leaned into what I know how to do, which is make jokes and be kind of edgy and tell it like it is. And a lot of those jokes were about drinking. So when I started to examine my relationship with alcohol, which was like a couple years later, I'd already written like a book about my kid being a toddler. Now I'm having a couple of, you know, for me, my alcoholism had like kind of a quick progression. Like I was pretty functional for years and years and years. And then once the hormones, the postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, once that hit me and I started seriously self-medicating that, it kind of went fast where I went to like, wow, I'm starting to drink every single day and I cannot take a day off. So when I quit drinking after, you know, we'll just say it like it is, I really was trying hard to manage my drinking and moderate. There's a whole chapter about all how hard I tried to moderate. And then I got to a point where I was like, you know, moderating is a lot of work, takes a lot of energy. It's like I'm making all these rules for myself and I'm breaking them. And then that's making me feel bad about myself. Yep. So instead of quitting drinking, what I'm going to do is stop trying to moderate. And I'm just going to be kinder to myself. And I'm just going to allow myself to drink the way I want to drink. I'm just not going to do anything dangerous. I'm not going to go out at night. Like I'll stay, where am I going anyway? I'm not going to go to Target at midnight. So like, I'll just be home. And if I go out, then somebody else, you know, my husband will drive or whatever. But this one particular day, so this went on for not that long, let's be real, like a few months of me going, this is great. I'm drinking the way I want to drink. The kids are in bed. Everybody's fine. My husband's home. And then one day I went to this play date with my kids and I drank too much because that's what I always do. And I got in the car and I drove home with two of my little kids, an 18-month-old and a 4-year-old in my car. I thought I was sober is the thing. Like if you had put me under oath, I would have told you like, I'm fine. Like I'm fine. I'm totally fine. But when I got home, my husband was very mad and he'd been trying to call me all night and I'd been like ignoring his calls and I could barely walk according to him. I don't quite remember that part, but when I woke up in the morning, I realized how drunk I'd been and it all kind of came tumbling down. I was like, this has all been like a charade. I don't know what this is what I always do. And this is what I'm going to do again if I continue the way I'm going. So I knew I had to make a change. Now, I had this little blog that only went out to like 500 people that I'd kept up. Even though I was an author, I never like promoted my blog that much. So now I go to update my blog and I'm thinking, Well, I have to be honest, it's only been a couple of days since I made the decision to stop drinking. I'd already gone to like a recovery meeting. Now I'm like, I want to be honest with my readers. So I just say, hey, I've made this decision. I think I was drinking too much. And now that story got picked up by a New York Times columnist. At the time, she had, I didn't even know. Okay. So this is like, this is a long time ago. This was 14 years ago. So all of a sudden I'm getting all these contacted by like these television shows. And I'm like, well, I don't understand how I just said something mild on my blog. Why is Dr. Phil calling me? And it turned out that I Googled or whatever. And I figured out that this writer, Lisa Belkin, had talked about me on her New York Times parenting blog called The Motherload. And I was basically outed as like, so now all these people thought I was very hypocritical, right? It was basically like backlash. Mm. Like, oh, here's this author that wrote Sippy Cups Are Not for Chardonnay and was all about like the moms should drink wine. And now apparently she quit drinking. So
I remember you when do? That was happening. Yeah, yeah.
It was awful.
I was sober at the time, and I remember thinking, and then reading about it in your book again and getting your perspective on it. Your book is just so, so well done. I mean, it just, like, you talk about the morning that you woke up after that night driving with the kids, and I was, like, right there, like, that feeling, and I was like, oh, I know how she felt that day, those waking up mornings and all of that. And then the idea, like, you were taking this brave decision, and I could sense it when it was happening in real time, because I would see, you know, that there was the mommy blogger who decided to stop drinking. And I was like, yes, that's great. Other people are going to look at that and be great. But oh my God, I'm terrified because she's so exposed right now.
I was so exposed.
Well, and so early on, like that, I just can't get over
it.
Literally counting days, right? And
so when I started getting contacted, at this point, I had 10 days of sobriety when the New York Times column came out, right? So I was like, hell no. I said no to I got approached by a ton of different people, and I was like, I have nothing to say. I just quit drinking. Please, please leave me alone. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just got sober. But like 4 months went by, and a New York Times writer, a journalist, actually reached out to my book company and said she wanted to interview me. I had a book coming out, and she just wanted like a balance. She wanted to like hear my story. And my book company said, you know, I think it's a good idea. It can't hurt. You don't have to have anything to like to teach people, right? She just wants to talk to you about this decision that you made. So I was like, okay. She was awesome. Her name's Jan Hoffman. She did a lot of like talking to me. She talked to like my husband. She talked to my brother. She wanted to hear about like my childhood. And then she wrote this like pretty beautiful, and it came out though on the front page of the Style section, the Sunday Style section. Now I'd been sober like 4 or 5 months. So now I was like, okay, I knew that this decision was my final decision. I knew that at this point, if I drank again, it would be a relapse. Whereas before that, I tried to stop drinking. I'm sure you guys are going to relate to this. I tried to stop drinking, but I didn't really call it like I'm in recovery from, it was like, I'm just trying to stop drinking. So then if I drank again, even though at one point I had quit drinking for like 9-10 months, but I didn't call it like, oh, I relapsed, because I never acknowledged,
yeah,
like I have alcoholism, right? So at this point, I'm like, well, I am not going to drink again. Like, I'm going to do everything it takes to not drink again. And if I do, then I'll be starting over. Like, so I felt comfortable to not tell anybody else how to do it. But like when Dr. Oz at the time, before he kind of went off the rails, when we all loved Dr. Oz for a brief period, when he was Oprah's Dr. Oz and he just had started to do his own show, I did that show. And what happened is I just told my story. I wasn't trying to tell anybody like what to do. And I got so many messages from women that were like, thank you for telling, this is my story. And thank you for me too. And can you help me? Do you think I'm an out? Like so many that I was like, oh, this is needed in the way that like when I talked about having a baby and I didn't have any experience with having a baby, but I was just telling my truth. Right. Yeah. I was talking about like, I didn't fall in love with my baby at first sight. Breastfeeding was really fucking hard. You know, I felt like I'm telling these truths because I don't know better. I don't know not to. So now I can talk about quitting drinking and the truth of it. Like not, and I'm so grateful and I'm so much better and I'm a better, none of that. Just like, yeah, it's freaking hard, but it's something that I had to do. And here's the way that I was drinking. And it probably doesn't look like what you think alcoholism looks like. So once women started to reach out to me, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be like the face of alcoholism, but if I'm asked to do something, I'll say yes. And I wasn't like constant, but I did 2020 when I was like 9 months sober. Then I did that Katie Couric interview when I was 4 years sober. And that's when I got outed for the drinking and driving. It was like progressive. I was progressively getting outed.
But oh my God, in the first days, months, year, all of this. I mean, that when everything I think we hear in recovery or coming into recovery new is like, don't change stuff, be, you know, just focus on today, not picking up a drink. That's all you have to do today. And all this stuff coming at you, you know.
I think, but in my regular life, it wasn't like I was suddenly the face of alcoholism. It's like these were coming. I was already kind of a public person a little bit. And by the time I did the Katie Couric thing, I had a TV show. I was hosting a TV show. So it's not, and I had already been on, like, I did the Today Show a few times in early sobriety, but I had already done the Today Show a bunch of times for books. So it wasn't, it wasn't like I was taking on this new persona in my mind. It was just like, here's another part of my story that I'm sharing. And I felt like I wasn't oversharing about it. I mean, my recovery life was very separate from any, like, I didn't talk about what went on in my recovery when I did like a TV show. I just kept it to like, this is my story. This is what happened. And this is why I quit. Do you know what I'm saying? I kept it real safe and really protected, like what was happening with my little recovery posse and like how I was doing things. But I just felt like, hey, here's another part of my story that if I'm asked to, I will talk about. I wasn't seeking out any TV about, believe me, my mom's show was like, obviously about being a mom. It's not like I was like, let me be on a TV show. It's hard to explain, but also I will say that for me, being public also kept me accountable because it was like a much bigger deal. Like, you know what I mean? If I went back to drinking, it was going to be a bigger deal. I'd have to then be honest about that, which I would have been. But I just felt like, okay, here's an extra like layer of protection.
That's literally how I felt with, you know, when I quit drinking, it was a year long social experiment and I started a blog called Sobriety Party and documented it. So, you know, it was very, I did it for the accountability, both for not drinking and for writing. You know, they both helped each other. I had similar experiences that you did, not at that level, but it was very like, I'm just talking about what early sobriety is like. I don't know. Like, I wasn't even in therapy yet. I didn't even know the language. I was just navigating what we now know as sober curiosity. That's what I was dealing with in 2015, but we didn't have the language for it. But you know, people started to care for, you know, people were having me on podcasts and having me, you know, interviewing me for their blogs. And I feel like I definitely overshared back then, but it was weirdly cathartic because I was accountable And I was normal. I was, it felt really good to normalize something that was so stigmatized. And, you know, there is part of me that kind of wishes that my early sobriety did have some privacy, but I really don't know any other way. It's just always been out there.
See, I'm the same way. I've always had no filter and talked about whatever was going on with me in the moment that it was going on. But look at how much you've helped people. They do get invested. And I think what you said, something that's so important. It's like when we normalize, you know, these experiences we have, I mean, alcohol, whether you're an alcoholic or not, or identify that way or have substance use disorder, regardless, it's a toxic, addictive substance, especially yes. when you drink too much. And even people that mm-hmm. don't have a problem with alcohol have gotten drunk and humiliated themselves. And it's very easy. I feel like I know a lot of people who I would not classify as being alcoholic, or I keep using the word alcoholic, and I know that we don't all use that word, but you know what I mean? Being addicted okay. to alcohol, being dependent. I have friends that have definitely gone through phases where they have abused alcohol. It didn't make them an addict. I don't think of them as people that needed to quit forever. You can kind of tell, and it's an inside job, whether you're somebody who is using up so much brain space trying to manage and control your drinking, right? And for me, it was so much better when I just gave that up. I mean, then looking back, I realized I'd spent so many years fighting that fight. But what I consistently hear, which is I think what you're speaking to, is that when you don't have a really dramatic story where you like lost a lot of things, or where people can look at you and go, oh, well, it's a good thing she got help. Yeah. When you start sharing about just that inner turmoil and the humiliation, the regular kind of humiliation, like Lisa, what you were talking about waking up in the morning and just going, oh my God, not again. How did that happen to me again? Women relate to that. People relate to that. Like so many people don't have a low bottom and they think, oh, I don't need to quit drinking. I guess I just have to live like this. I guess I'm just somebody who has trouble with this. And my message is like, you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And to me, I felt like, you know, I know with my drinking, eventually, you know, I was at the point at the end where I was like, I knew how bad, but it was 24/7 with alcohol and cocaine for me for like the last 18 months. So I was very well aware. But before that, I had been like, okay, so I thought of myself as a heavy drinker. I'm a heavy drinker. It will probably mean that I die earlier. It will mean, you know, number of things. But look, this is just the way I'm going to be going through life. You know, and I was resigned to that idea.
I was going
to
say,
I'm going to wake up humiliated. I'm going to wake up. You know, these things are going to happen. But I'm not one of those people who has to do something about it.
Right.
And I think it's important to hear all these different stories because I had a very low bottom. You know, I did not drink every day, but when I did, I drank to the point of blacking out. And then I made a whole bunch of really reckless decisions. I think it's important that we're hearing all three different ways to stop drinking or to reevaluate your relationship with alcohol. And it just shows that there is no one path. There is no one way to get sober or sober curious. It's just, you really just have to look in the mirror honestly and just be like, is this how I want to live my life every day? Am I being the best version of myself? Am I happy? You know, you have to ask,
do I want this?
Is this what I want in my life?
And for me, I had to kind of get over, like, I carried around this high bottom thing, like a little badge of honor, like, oh, I wasn't that bad, you know. But if you think about it, and I shared about this one time, I was talking about like in a recovery meeting, having a high bottom. And this woman came over to me afterwards and she was like, you really share a lot about like having a high bottom. And she goes, you know, driving drunk with your kids in the car, not that fancy.
Yeah.
Wow. And the truth is, right, like to somebody else looking at my life, that'd be a low bottom. Like that would be mm-hmm. like, wow, you're drinking led you to make a decision to that you could have ended your marriage, you could have killed somebody, you could have lost your kid. Like a lot of things could have happened that didn't happen. But like, just because in my brain, I was like, well, having a few glasses of wine every night isn't a low bottom, right? But define low bottom. That's the thing. It's right. Like my decision-making doesn't matter if I was drinking 24/7. My decision-making was also altered when I drank. And I was behaving in ways that sober me would be very judgmental of. I was behaving beneath my moral compass. And by the way, once I really had some sobriety behind me, I could look back at my life, which is also in the book, and go, God, like, yes, I love to like make it sound better than it was, but like I was doing some shit. Like,
yeah.
Dated a married guy, like did some things that like I don't like to think of myself as that person, but it wasn't great. Yeah. Like, and usually alcohol was involved. So, or it was always involved when I was doing things that I'm ashamed of, behaving in ways that I'm ashamed of.
I think one of the things too that is really when people talk about, I know when my book came out, people and I said, you know, I was 20, like I said, I was 24/7 for 18 months, but people would be like, well, you didn't land in jail. Well, you didn't lose your job. Well, you didn't, you know, lose your family. And I was like, no, but like, I wanted to die. I would wake up disappointed that my eyes opened every morning. Like how much, you know, and it was like, it was enough for me. Okay. Like it was my bottom. And I think one of the things that helps, you know, us stay sober is the fact that we said, I qualified on me. You know, I didn't have somebody force me to go in when I still didn't really believe I needed or wanted to do it.
Right. I think that's so interesting. I mean, people come to it a lot of different ways. You know, they have an intervention, people go to rehab. And some people, I mean, I'm the same as you. Like I just decided enough is enough. And I don't want to take any more chances. In my mind, I was like, I have way too much to lose. You know, I have these, I was always somebody, I'm like ashamed of this, but I was always somebody who almost resented what I have. I was like, I'm just not somebody who should have three young kids. Like that's just not my personality. You know, I was barely on board with having like a second kid. And then I was pregnant with twins and it was always like, everything felt like too much for me. You know, like, can't everybody see like that this is really hard for me? Of course I drink. And
yeah,
you know, yeah. I had to really take stock of the fact that like, I have a great marriage. I have three kids. I'm very necessary to other people. And like, who do I think I am just constantly trying to check out of it? You know?
Right. It's the old, if you had my life, you'd drink too. That's what I used to always say. Like, you know, well, if you had my job, I drink too. You drink too. If you had my life, like you don't understand how hard it is for me. I should be running around doing something fabulous. And I'm in this office 80 hours a week. That's why, you know, you would do it too. Right.
How could I be complaining about like having a nice house, having three kids, having a husband, having cars, like having work that I enjoy doing, but yet I found a way to like shit on all the things that I had. And that was a big, I don't know, like a, I hate the word journey, but you know what I mean? Like there was there was a long time from knowing what I needed to do to change things to getting to the point where I was like, oh, I want what I have. And now I'm willing to like do what it takes to keep what I have. And now I'm so happy that That's I quit beautiful. When I did, because look at all I was risking. You know, it only takes that momentary, that moment of clarity where you're like, oh, this could all go away. All this stuff that I complain about all the time could go away.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I remember thinking after, like, my dealer used to be like in and out of my apartment all the time with like tons of, you know, his little like knapsack full of stuff. I'm like, when I finally like came to, I was like, what the, I mean, I would have, there would have been enough, you know, if a cop had followed him to my apartment one night, you know, that would have been it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize when I was doing all these crazy, reckless things, how much I was putting on the line. And I certainly didn't appreciate the life I had.
Right. Right. It's hard to appreciate what we have, yeah. You know, a lot of us don't. I'm so glad. And really the recovery for me, and maybe you guys relate to this, but it was, I was not somebody who right at the beginning was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, I feel great. I've never had this much energy before. I was of the kicking and screaming variety. I was of the, I don't want to be doing this. This is so much change. Like, why do I have to like go to meetings? Why do I have to like read about like self-help books? Like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. I'm a very like non, I don't express myself physically that way. In my early recovery, I was kicking doors, pounding on walls. I mean, it was just, you know, I don't know how you expect me to do this kind of thing.
I still break shit. I punched a wall a few months ago. Like, life is really hard sometimes.
We recommend often to listeners that they go to a break room, one of those places where you just go in, play loud music, and you just smash stuff with a bat.
That seems like it would require so much energy.
It does, but you know, I gotta tell you, I do a lot of, you know, yoga meditation stuff. When I smashed old printers and video game systems for like 30 minutes while listening to heavy metal, I stepped back out onto the streets of Manhattan, never felt more calm or more zen in my life. And I've done like international yoga retreats. Like I've done it all, but nothing.
You've done a month on Bali.
I spent a month in Bali, and nothing is more calming than smashing a bunch of shit in Midtown.
That's funny. It does sound cathartic.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, if that's your thing, I think women could benefit from getting more in touch with that side of themselves too. You know, we're taught that we're not supposed to be angry, and the anger is not a bad emotion. You know, it is just an emotion. And it's okay if you have found a healthy way to release it.
If you channel it the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, Stephanie, you are on Recovery Rocks, and we would love to hear, and I know our listeners would love to hear, what kind of music, whether it's, you know, what was sort of the soundtrack to your recovery? What do you turn to for in recovery, or what are you listening to now? What's your favorite music? Anything music. We did notice, Tawny, with the eagle eye, noticed that you have on a Bad Company sweatshirt, which, you know.
I do. But I'll keep it real with you guys. I'm a bit of a poser. Like, I like AC/DC. I do have some rock t-shirts. It's not that I don't, but I am such a, I'd love to even call myself a nerd, but that would be a compliment. I'm very cringy, as my kids would say. I listen to a lot of yacht rock. It is like,
oh, that's great. We support that.
That's great.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, it's not rock. I'm not rocking out. I'm like, no, my kids make so much fun of me.
All genres. Yeah. And we love rock, yacht rock. Yes.
My kids know so many 70s songs. Like, a Captain and Tennille song will come on my yacht rock, and my kids can sing all the words. And I'm like, how do you guys know this song? And they're like, Mom, from you. And my kids knew early on, they're like, I would cover the name on the radio in the car, and I'd go, who's this? And they'd be like, Michael McDonald.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
That is why my mom
Michael McDonald,
always does-
he's sober.
He is?
Oh, is he?
From the Jimmy Brothers?
Yes.
Yes. I saw him actually. Yes. Yes. He's totally sober, has been for many years. And I went to a gala, like a Facing Addiction gala, and it was honoring Joe Walsh of the Eagles, and who was there, and Ringo Starr. was there, and they got up and played. It was like in the in the Rainbow Room in Rock Center, and Michael McDonald came on. He was there also because they're all friends, and started playing with them, and it was amazing.
Oh, that's so cool! Do you guys know who Colin Hay is from the band Men at Work? From the 80s band Men at Work, but Colin Hay is this like insanely amazing singer-songwriter, like in his own right. He does world tours just by himself. And sometimes he does stuff with Men at Work, but he had this song called Freedom Calling. He's longtime sober and he's written a couple of songs. If you ever listen to the song Freedom Calling, I used to play, I made like sober playlists of just like some goods, some people you've never heard of, but like I went and found all the songs that I loved that just, and early sobriety days, I would just, that was when you would make a mixed CD. And then I would sometimes sit in my car and just listen to my mixes and cry, but cry in a good way, like cathartic cry. Like not in, I'm so sad, but in like, wow, this is a lot. And this is inspiring and I'm not alone. There are people singing about this. There are people like, you know.
Absolutely.
There was hearing you share this, Stephanie, is making me think there's one particular birthday here in New York where I was in an Uber going to, you know, doing something for my birthday. And I don't know why, but I had my headphones on in the back of an Uber listening to Everybody Hurts by REM. And I'm just crying. Not in a, like in a good way. I'm just like, this is such a good song and I'm like really feeling it. And it's my birthday. Should I be feeling like this?
Oh my, second guessing your own feelings.
Yeah. Is this an appropriate feeling for this occasion?
For me to be having right now?
Well, all feelings are kind of new when you're so.
You're so right.
What is happening? Why I'm emotional and I don't know why. And it's like, yeah, I wasn't used to that. Yeah. What were you going to say, Lisa? You had a story about that too?
Music? I totally slipped my mind now. I started focusing on what Tawny was saying. But
I am now looking at Recycled Karma's website and I want all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. That's where we earlier discovered that Stephanie got her sweatshirt. So you might want to go check it out.
Yes. Recycled Karma. They make them so that they look like you've had it for 50 years.
I love that.
They're all faded and they come that way.
So Stephanie, tell everybody where they can find you. The book is Drunk-ish, Loving and Leaving Alcohol. Guys, it's great. It is just, like I said, I tore through it. It's so real. There is so much relatable. And the way Stephanie writes is so puts you right in that room and right there with her. And
well, you guys are writers, so you know that you have to expose yourself. So there were a lot of moments that I was writing that I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm saying this. So I still get a little like a weird chill when I think about other people reading my very personal thoughts. But just know that I do not try to put a shine on it. It's not going to be a book full of like.
No, but it is a very funny book. Your sense of humor is just amazing. It's great. It just shines through. Yeah.
You have to.
Right? Yeah. You have to.
Absolutely.
You can find Drunkish anywhere books are sold, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, independent bookshops, hopefully, Target.com. And then my podcast, just for Crying Out Loud with Lynette Carolla. She's my co-host. And we do talk about, addiction. Well, I do. She doesn't, but you know what I mean? And I also teach writing. I just wanted to put that out there. And you can go to my website, StephanieWilderTaylor.com. I've been teaching writing for like over like 12 years. And I do little small workshops for women to tell memoir stories. Anyway, you can find more on my website.
Yeah, it's all in the show notes. You can find her, and we'll also have a link to Stephanie's Instagram on there as well.
I so appreciate you guys having me. This has been really nice. And I hope it helps somebody feel.
It will. It will. Thank you for sharing it with us. We're thrilled. We've been really looking forward to talking to you about this. And hopefully we'll have you back.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to have you guys on for Crying Out Loud. So look for that. Yes. Very shortly. You. Okay.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, Sobriety Party, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.